I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Don't Know Her podcast. I am Scott.
And I'm Michael.
And we are back again to talk about a, well, in this case, a person who works within the realm of film. We are celebrating another queer individual on screen or behind the screen. Who are we talking about, Michael?
Ira Sachs, the second director-writer after Dee Reese that we're talking about. Listeners may know him, his work, Love is Strange, Little Men, Frankie, Keep the Light On, Keep the Lights On even, plural, and another queer to add to our collection.
Never can have too many queers in the collection.
No, and he seems very different to the other people we've covered in the last few episodes.
Why?
I just feel like Ira's an interesting filmmaker, an example for us to talk about, because I think part of the reason he is, let's say, underappreciated for the basis of this podcast, this episode, but he is so because he's telling stories that are personal to him. Like, he's a commodity of himself nowadays, like an Ira Sachs film, you'll get, as he calls it, an adult film for adults. He isn't trying to break the mold in huge ways. He's not trying to make a mainstream film. He just wants to tell his stories. He just seems so, like, happy to do that. And he openly, and we'll get into this when we talk about specific films, refuses to fit inside boxes, whether they're genres or expectations, which have middling results, and we'll get into those. But yeah, I think he's a really interesting, like, almost European film sensibility in terms of what he's doing. And he is just enjoying making those films, and yeah, so that's why I would say he is different or to so many of the other people we've talked about. Because even with Dee Reese, I think the sort of movies Dee Reese seems to be interested in is a sort of big entertainment piece which does have something to say, as opposed to Ira Sachs has a lot to say, and the characters will have be representing way more than just themselves. You know, they'll be representing a whole conflict on race or class or gender or whatever it might be. But I still think his intention is so, like, a personal thing, which is interesting.
Yeah, I really like how you put that about they're representing a lot more than themselves on screen. And I think that is quite universal in his films. But yeah, they are very adult. I like his way of framing that. We actually, as we record, went and saw Passages last night at the BFI South Bank in London. And Ira was there giving a Q&A following the film. And it was these words he used in this instance. And it was certainly fascinating to hear him talk about that film. It brought a lot kind of more kind of colour, even though it was already in it, to kind of his approaches and why things happen a certain way in his films, but maybe specifically in the case of that one. But yeah, they are adult, and they are fairly kind of quiet and isolated in what they cover, even if they're representing bigger, broader things and representing a lot more than the characters within. So yeah, it's a really good one to cover, actually, because I think there is a through line and similarity to all of his work, but they are in some cases quite different in what they're covering or their tone in elements. But yeah, I'm a fan, so I'm glad we're doing it.
Yeah, and I think another element which I find really interesting and something I enjoy, well, to a point, is that he'll say this himself, like, he's writing from what he knows. So like a cis male privileged queer position. So the stories are from that frame of mind. Mm-hmm. It's the same, like, I remember being a kid, and at the time, I really, when I was a teenager, and I really liked Woody Allen. I was talking to an adult about that, and they were like, God, look, all he's talking about is like an intellectual New Yorker. Like, well, he has nothing to say about anything. And regardless of that, that's the sort of thinking I think you could apply to Ira Sachs. And I feel very lucky that I also live in a privileged male queer bubble of the world, you know, and I get a lot from most of his movies.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess an easy way in perhaps for us. But yes, he's certainly covering a world that he knows and knows fairly well, I think, for the most part, in terms of what he's covering. And I think you can sense elements coming from perhaps lived experiences or, you know, maybe just things that he's understood along the way by being a gay man living in New York.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll get into the ins and outs of his life, but when would you have first known who Ira Sachs was, or the first film of his that you saw? Do you remember?
Yeah, the first film I saw was Keep the Lights On, which was shown to me by our friend and previous podcast guest, Daniel Massey. It was one that I think he wanted me to watch for a while, and then eventually I came around to the idea. No, I didn't have to be pushed that hard. But I didn't... I think thereafter it would have probably then been Love is Strange before I watched another, and there was a huge gap, I think, in between watching those two films. And in my mind when I watched Love is Strange, I thought, wow, these are so different. He makes very different films. But re-watching them... They have a lot more in common, actually, than I realised or thought at the time. So, but yeah, Keep the Lights On was my first. What about you?
Yeah, exactly the same. I remember watching it and being really affected by this toxic relationship in most ways. And it's really lingered in my brain. So yeah, anytime there was a new Ira Sachs film, I would go see it in the cinema. So Love is Strange, Little Men. I did not see Frankie in the cinema. In my head, it was because of COVID, but I don't believe that to be true. I just didn't go. And as you've mentioned, Passages. So yeah, I really do get interested in the work that he's doing. And also because he, a bit like us, clearly loves actors who in some ways you could call underappreciated. Do you know, like, he is working with so many amazing actors.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there are some like Isabelle Huppert who are not in need of work or anything, but you know, he's given, say, a Greg Kinnear and Marissa Tomei and Jennifer Ely and Paulina Garcia like these great parts, and I don't believe they're people that studios are chasing after for roles, sadly. I know Marissa Tomei's in Spider-Man, Tom Holland, so maybe she is, maybe. But, yeah, I love it.
Yay, love it. Ira. What
a
interesting slate of films we have to talk about with it.
And before we go into a run-through, I think it is really important that we mention a really key collaborator that Ira works with. So that is the writer, and I'm going to butcher this name, Maurizio Zacharias.
Yeah, I would say Maurizio Zacharias.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. They co-write, I think, the films that are considered the more successful are the ones that Maurizio and Ira have worked together. So I will always forget to mention Maurizio as we continue, but very much part of our thoughts.
Yeah, and what he'd flagged last night in this conversation where we'd seen him is that there's a very specific way in which they work together. Maurizio writes the first draft. He does that away from Ira, comes up with it, fleshes it out as he intends. But then Ira takes the first draft and redrafts it. And I think by the sounds of what he was saying, does change quite a lot, but it's still very important that it's like Maurizio creates this foundation. And then it'd be interesting to know which of the sort of elements that stand out and feel common amongst them are their own things that they bring to it. I would be fascinated to see in a case maybe what a first and second draft actually looks like and what does change and what elements are brought in. But yes, it sounds like that's the way they always work, and they have worked on most of their films together, most of the films of Iris Axe. I think there's maybe just a couple that were written by someone else, not Maurizio Zacharias.
Yeah, well, Married Life actually is probably the biggest, the most obvious example. And yeah, another thing just to go on that, with the writing process of the creation is that Iris Axe talks about, you know, casting the actors and that the parts being a melding of the actor and the character. So I'm actually, and it wasn't clear to me at what point Maurizio would include it as an actor if they had been cast later on, whereas sometimes they write with an actor in mind. So anyway, it's a very interesting process, but Maurizio, brilliant guy. Great work. And we will mention you again, I hope. And if we don't, you'll be in our thoughts. It's a silent mention, which is the best type.
No, he's been mentioned loud and clear.
So Ira was born in Memphis in November 1965. He talks about coming from an upper middle class suburban family. He is very grateful for this, was exposed to culture from a young age, and describes his dad as a bit of a hippie. But does talk about there being such different types of people that he would engage with, like a world which is not far away from what he depicts in lots of his movies, of different cultures and different classes merging or living side by side, but perhaps not always in harmony. He went to a maternal school, so it used to be a girls' school, and he talks about that feeling like a very safe environment. And then he gets to go into this very hyper-masculine all-boys school at, I believe, the seventh grade, although my writing could mean a few different things. And yeah, this is like that transition is something that he remembers very distinctly. He goes on to go to Yale, where he says he was an okay student, but it was mostly the experience he got, like who he met, the types of conversations that were being had. And his intention was to become a filmmaker. But he doesn't get into any film school, and he talks about struggling afterwards. And he felt like he had to wait for permission to tell his stories. But of course, no film school. He had to push himself, and push himself he did. So he graduates in 1988, and then his first short is called Vaudeville, which happens very soon afterwards. It's a really interesting story. It's about a traveling theatrical troupe and mirrors the troubles that are happening in America through this tight-knit community and the dynamics between the characters. He follows it up in 1993 with Lady. And then in 1996, we get his first feature film, The Delta. And I'm so intrigued to hear what you thought about it.
Sure. So The Delta, I guess, first of all, what is it about? The Delta is about a young, attractive man.
Which a lot of these stories are, yes, about attractive people. Yes, it seems to be a
threat. Who we meet at the very beginning on a venture out cruising where he encounters a Vietnamese man. They have a experience together. And then from there, part ways, and then we sort of follow the American back into his world of his kind of circle of friends, his girlfriend, as he is a bisexual character but closeted to them, and follows him kind of in these you know, moments with friends. And Iris Axe is very good at capturing these moments. You really feel the sort of time and place and atmosphere of what they're kind of going through, the age they're at, the energy kind of shared amongst these groups. And from there, we're sort of kind of with that, in that rhythm for a while. This sort of unusual relationship he has with his girlfriend, he kind of comes across as quite a needy person, and she's a bit kind of uncertain of what he wants from her. And then we find him and the Vietnamese character crossing paths again. And they kind of spend this very interesting night together, going out on his father's boat. And then sort of getting to know them and the things that they share, and then the things about them which makes them incredibly different in the places in life and their experiences. And then we sort of see them part again, and things unfold very differently for them sort of from that moment, and it drifts on. I thought it was great. I think this is a film very much like his others, where, like I'm describing, this atmosphere and tone and this real feeling of the film, they're very hypnotic. They draw you in very easily. I don't know why, considering I like all of his films I've seen, I don't know why I was expecting anything less than that. But as soon as I turned it on, I wanted to be in this world and I wanted to see what was going to happen and where it was going to go, even though, you know, it's fairly quiet in sort of what it's covering and how it's being covered until certain beats within the story play out. But I just found it really involving and engaging, and I liked these intimate moments between characters and the dynamics between them all. You really feel like this is being observed by a real person viewing real people.
You're so cute. I'm cute.
I like dog. What they call?
These things? Dimples.
Dimple?
No. Dimples.
Dimple.
Yeah.
You sexy.
Sexy?
Yeah. You know that? Do you get?
Why do you care?
For me? I don't care. I like Draeger.
I highly recommend this film. It somehow ended up on YouTube. You can watch it on there for free. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think the performances by Shane Gray and Tang Chan are so inviting, particularly Chan, because as the Vietnamese person who has such like hope and love and I don't know, desire. So yeah, I really, really liked it. I think it's really wonderful. And a really great debut film. In many ways, it's as accomplished as some of his later work.
I think so. And I think this is where it's really clear from the off that he's sort of established his tone and his view on the world and how he's going to present characters and let their relationships unfold. And it feels very akin to the stuff he was doing later, or even the latest with Passages, for example. There's a lot that you can find in common about getting a lot from character motivations, even when it feels very muddy and you're uncertain and you can't relate. You can see it in that character through expression, through the way they behave, and you can get to understand even the more complex choices of characters just by how they present themselves, how these actors are performing these roles. And yeah, it's really, really, really impressive, especially as a debut.
Yeah, and it is celebrated. So it goes to Sundance, it goes to different festivals. It is doing all the right things, really, that you'd want for a debut film of that nature as well. You know, there's only there's an extent to how successful a queer film would be at that time. It was going to be openly queer as opposed to something a bit more right-wing friendly, let's say. He follows it up with his second film, 40 Shades of Blue, in 2005. This tells the story of a young Russian woman living in Memphis, and she lives with an aging music producer, and she comes to question her life when the music producer's adult son comes to visit. It goes on to win the Grand Jury Prize at the Sundance Film Festival. So this is it. Like, this is very exciting for Ira. And quickly, in 2007, we get Married Life, which, as we mentioned, he did not write with Mauricio, but he did write with Oren Moverman. Sorry, this is where I should prepare to say names. Oren Moverman.
Great. I'm going to go with both.
Yeah. And Married Life stars Pierce Brosnan and Chris Cooper as, you know, laddie chums. And
exactly.
Patricia Clarke.
Laddie chums.
That's what sums
that
them
makes
up,
it
right?
Sound like this is England or something.
Well, like, sorry, they are in, what, 1960s America, but they're very, like, they meet for a cocktail to talk about women and such.
Why, may I ask, are you going to leave, Pat? Because I want to be truly happy. Oh, that sounds reasonable.
Being very reasonable.
Well, what's her name? Look, I know you and Pat well enough to figure your marriage is not an unhappy one. As a matter of fact, as marriages go, I always thought it was pretty good. The most successful marriage I've ever known.
Her name is Kay. It's Kay Nesbitt.
Pat'll take it hard.
I know.
And Patricia Clarkson is Chris Cooper's wife, who we are set to believe at the beginning they're quite bored with each other and she's a bit dull, which don't cast Patricia Clarkson if you want her to be
so
dull.
No.
Enter Rachel McAdams, who is Chris Cooper's bit on the side. And it's a love triangle. It's a kind of mystery film in a way because a murder is being planned. Pierce Brosnan takes a shine to Rachel McAdams. Rachel McAdams is also kind of an archetype of a strong woman in the 1960s. She's a widow. She knows what she wants and yet seems to succumb to these kind of gross men. But also Pierce does have a charm, as does Chris Cooper. It's really interesting because we'll get into it, but Ira Sachs is really open about not being a genre filmmaker. This, in theory, is a thriller mystery. Like, mm-hmm. It fits a very specific genre. And I was listening to an interview there he was doing about Passages, and he reflects on Marriage Story, I keep calling it, Married Life. And he says, like, he's not versed in that genre. So he's like, so people may or may not like it. And the reason they probably don't like it is because I'm not, you know, knowledgeable about thrillers.
Wow.
And which is really
telling.
Evident. Yeah. I think it's a real shame because I think that could have been such a exciting and enjoyable, whereas it's a bit dull and none of the naturalistic sort of things that, and observational and, you know, these epic moments in everyday life, which I love in an Ira Sachs film, that's mostly lost. There are pockets of it, but overall you're like, just let this great cast have a good time. And I feel like we're a bit robbed.
Yes, that's so interesting. That makes so much sense, because my top note here is just tonally curious from the off. I mean, it's...
That's just me.
That's why I like him, why I love this film. I don't love this film. I like the curiosity of it. I quite like that the reason it is the way it is because it was made by someone who doesn't know the genre. So therefore, this is the take on a thriller by someone who doesn't know thrillers. Now it makes complete sense, because I was like, I might not be into this and I don't find it as involving or as exciting as I ought to something within the genre. However, I've never really seen it done in this way, and it's kind of... it's everything feels just slightly off, which makes me enjoy it more in some way, but also left feeling a bit sort of removed or cold on it, because also it's what, set in the 60s, was it?
Yeah, that's right.
And even the period is not convincing, even though all the sort of details are there, the costumes, the cars, but it just doesn't feel like it's set at that time. It feels like a contemporary film with contemporary people stuck in a pastiche of the 60s.
It's like Stepford Wives or something. So it's based on this Alfred Hitchcock short, like, from TV. So it had, like, I think the thing about it, reading more about it after watching, is how sad I am of the film that we could have had with that cast. Because those actors are all people that I enjoy watching on screen, and I don't think get enough great parts anymore anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is confusing. Once they started once Chris Cooper is like, I'm going to kill Patricia Clarkson, I was like, what is happening? Because everything else is very, like, normal, and now we're killing someone. And then you realize, oh no, we're supposed to be watching a Hitchcock movie, not a, you know, a drama.
Yes, that's it. And that's where the real confusion is. And if you're going to kill a character, you can't go killing Patricia Clarkson. Come on.
But I will say the payoff, though, in that she is way more interesting than,
yes,
anyone else in the film, obviously.
Yeah.
But no, but she is, it's not even hidden depth. They're not that hidden, but she is way more, I don't know, central to the themes of the thing. Like, she wants her own happiness too, let's say.
Yes, I think so. I think you can tell that Ira is most interested in her, but then again, more confusion comes from it all being sort of framed around Pierce Brosnan's character as the narrator,
yeah,
and the sort of guiding hand in the direction of the film. But you can feel the eye behind the lens, the mind behind the film is interested in Patricia. As any gay man or anyone in the right mind ought to be.
Yeah. It's just a fascinating choice. And now it was successful, so it made money.
Wow.
I think actually, I need to double check this, but I think it is the most commercially successful,
really,
of his films, but it's also the most expensive of his films,
I imagine. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't even heard of it. And we've done Patricia Clarkson for this podcast, and I didn't even clock it then.
Yeah. Maybe it's the cast at that time as well. You know, I'm sure adaptation, did Chris Cooper just win an Oscar? And Pierce Brosnan is a person that people go to watch. I love Pierce. I mean, obviously, yeah, I'm not going to... He's from down the road from me. But anyway, this success did not lead to what Ira Sachs thought was going to happen. So he had a script ready called The Goodbye People. He had a cast, including Kirsten Dunst and Patricia Clarkson, ready to go. Nobody would fund it. Nobody would fund this project. And he talks about this in interviews of the being the moment where he's like, okay, I have to do this alone. Like, I'm never going to get things through a studio. And he goes on and makes this documentary called Last Address, a short documentary, I should say, in 2010, which is on Vimeo. You can watch it. I was going to say wordless, but there is no dialogue in it. It is a portrait of New York artists who have died of AIDS-related illnesses between 1983 and 2007. It's a beautiful film, as you can tell from that description. So he goes back to what he knows best, the low-budget queer film. So he leaves the genre pieces with bigger stars aside, and he goes to keep the lights on, literally, because he probably needed, you know, to work and make money. Jokes. No, I'm sure we probably didn't make money out of Keep the Lights On. But Keep the Lights On comes in 2012, and it stars Thier Lindhart as a filmmaker who falls in love with a lawyer played by Zachary Booth. You follow them as in their journey, and as things go from good to bad, to worse, to okay, to worse, up and down, up and down, up and down. And it really is a film of just about focusing on their relationships, mostly on the main character and how he is, I guess, coping with this relationship where his partner has a drug addiction. And it's just the symptoms of that. Like, it's very intense to watch.
You don't need it.
Eric.
No, you're going to come sleep with me in the bed.
No,
now.
I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, I am not.
Yes, you are going to come sleep with me in the bed.
Ah! Good. Stop it!
Call the police and say
what you want. Yeah?
I think the film is intense in general, which is what I guess romance can be. But don't worry, he has a best friend played by the amazing Julianne Nicholson.
Thank God.
I would have watched this when it came out, not on the cinema, but on the TV or computer or whatever. And I have such a vivid memory of the most dark parts of this film. Like, it's something that's kind of seared in my mind. I think it's a really fascinating portrait of a dynamic between people who clearly love each other but are really destructive. And I think both of them are pretty bad with each other. I'm rewatching it now. So these characters are in their 20s, I want to say. But they seem young now, young to me, watching it for this. I felt really lucky that I was never in a scenario like that. And B, just really like, God, like, we as humans are fucked up, do you know? So, like, you see him at early on, like, talking with Julianne Nicholson, and they're having, such a lovely, warm feeling about this new relationship.
He's just, like, nice.
Nice.
Yes, very nice.
Where's he from?
He's from the suburbs of Boston.
He's a lawyer at Random House.
You know, he'd be the first American boyfriend I'd ever have.
I haven't seen you this excited about anyone in a long time.
But then you continue it as it just gets so hard. Like, it's really tricky. But what do you think about it?
I think, again, this is where the hypnotism of the film and just this quite intoxicating, that's the word I'm looking for, intoxicating mood and atmosphere, it really envelops you and sweeps you in. And I'm often, as long as they're done well, like this film is, I'm into films where time kind of jumps quite erratically. It feels like at times, not erratically, because a scene ends, it moves on to the next, but it will jump forward quite unusual periods of time. A scene will end and then we're at quite a different stage in their relationship, and there has been a big change happen, but we haven't seen that play out. But we're sort of getting this sense of their life together in these moments, these sequences, be those moments of intimacy or moments in social settings, times of great difficulty for them both, challenging times. And yes, this back and forth between both of their addictions to things and how those affect them in different ways and interfere with the relationship. But overall, my main takeaway is that sort of it is an intoxicating film, even in its darkness and its portrayal of troubles within a relationship. There is something about it which kind of sweeps you in and still has this kind of light or hopefulness, but I think that's coming from some character perspectives that do sort of let it glide along as you jump between these moments in time. I think it's quite a special film, actually, and one that, reflecting on, feels different to my memory of it, which maybe was even more kind of bleak. Maybe at the time I hadn't seen many other films quite like it. I reckon I probably watched this now, not a huge amount of time after it came out, even though I felt like it would have been, but now I'm not so sure. So yeah, I would definitely recommend this one.
Yeah.
And I think it feels absolutely an Iris Axe film, and for the better in that way.
Yeah, no, I would highly recommend it too. And I think it would be very easy for it to judge its characters. Again, that's an Iris Axe thing. There is no real judgment of the characters.
Yes, good point.
And I think this is maybe the best example of that, because some of the behaviours in it, weirdly, it's so similar to me to Passages, his most recent film, nearly beat for beat sometimes. I don't mean that as negative, just more an interesting kind of counterpoint about, you know, however many years have gone between these two films and how just character dynamics, and like they're totally different people in ways, but they behave in the same sort of awful way. You're like, yeah.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. I think maybe he comes at this sort of the idea of, he was talking last night about Passages being about sort of pleasure, and maybe quite specifically the pleasure of sex and the allure of that. Now, maybe there's certain things that are quite specifically tied in his mind around presenting that on screen, and therefore they just manifest in a way which is so similar, because ultimately this film is about two people who were drawn together to enjoy sex and do enjoy sex in a way that we later come to understand as, you know, also a symptom of larger things that are going on and part of that, but it makes it all the more interesting in how the evolution of their both sexual and romantic relationship.
Mm. And Keep the Lights On wins Best Feature Film at the Berlin International Film Festival. It gets nominations for Feature Film Director and Screenplay at the Independent Spirit Awards. In short, it really launches Iris Sachs and the sort of Iris Sachs film we've come to know.
Sure.
So we get, 2 years later, Love is Strange, which, for my money, is my favourite Iris Sachs film for so many reasons. It's one of my favourite films ever, I would say. And one of my favourite queer films, too. And it follows John Lithgow and Alfred Molina, who have been together for years and years and years, as they marry. And then Alfred Molina loses his job in a Catholic school as a music teacher because of this marriage, even though everyone, it's never been a secret that he is gay, and they've met John Lithgow and everything. And Alfred and John have to temporarily separate in terms of their living conditions until they can find a new home together.
We need a place to stay.
Wait a minute. Did I miss something here?
These last weeks have been tough on us, Elliot. Losing the job, looking for health insurance. We need a breather.
Yeah, believe me, moving out of here is the last thing we want to do.
It's only temporary. We'll find a new place. Very soon.
And it causes them to reflect, but also their family. And when I say family, I'm using the very kind of open word of like friends and family, people that are really close to them. And it just reflects on all of these relationships and the dynamics. And I just think it's absolutely wonderful. And Harriet Sampson Harris is in it. So I don't know what more you'd want.
Yeah, all vital elements. Yeah, I think this is the best. It is a wonderful film, I think it is. As good as a film like this can be, it's really, really wonderful and really, really interested in its characters and the quite unusual circumstances they find themselves in. And I think that's maybe my sort of key takeaway beyond perhaps what we're getting in other films. Although I'm not necessarily sure of that, but a lot of this is about the value and importance for these characters, and I think quite specifically for queer male characters, I think perhaps more, but maybe I'm sort of being presumptuous there, but about living in the city and the need to live in the city, and the kind of the circumstances they find themselves in would not have to be the case if A, they didn't feel so attached and have that need to be in the city, and B, if their family around them weren't in the same position, in that they truly only do have the space to put up one of them each, and even that is at a push, and, you know, one's on a sofa somewhere, the other's sharing a bunk bed with a much younger person, and the sort of awkwardness that comes from that, sharing the load of bringing people in for an undisclosed sort of period of time. But that allows such an interesting story to be told, which is quite unlike anything else. And the sort of inter-character dynamics, again, are at the forefront of why it works, and seeing who they then meet and are surrounded by in their respective new sort of living conditions. Marissa Tomei is absolutely wonderful in this. Along with, you know, so many of, I think, the supporting players. But I think she's a real standout in it. It's really wonderful, really special. And although it is, again, an Iris Sachs film, and very importantly so, I think it's a very unique film, and I don't really know anything else which is telling a story layered in the way that it is layered, and what it's trying to cover and get to and address about being a certain type of person in a certain circumstance.
And I think it's a really happy film. Even though, I mean, you know, the characters are sad, and there's, you know, it's heartbreaking watching, like, Alfred Molina really struggles. His character struggles with being separated, not just from his husband, but from his life. And that's so well done. Like, God, the moment where he is doing, like, a one-on-one lesson with this child, And you just have, you're just looking at this face and you understand exactly what is going on and everything that's been crumbling around him. And you feel like that sense of loss is so, you know, sort of tangible. And then when he arrives, yeah, in the house with where John Lithgow is staying, or the flat, I should say, with Marissa Tomei and her husband and son. And just the way that John Lithgow looks at Alfred Molina and the way they interact, mm-hmm. and then the way the other characters then step away to give them space.
Yeah.
There's not much dialogue, but this is as a beautifully realized dynamic and portrait of love, not just romantic, but like with families and with friends that I can think of in film.
Yeah.
And there's this, I could go on and on about this movie, but I think something that, unlike other Iris Sachs films, that I love about it is that there is commitment, which I think is a big thing in his movies, of commitment and like what is worthwhile sticking with and what's not. And this is a very positive portrayal, I think, of commitment. And there's such an amazing exchange between John Lithgow and Alfred Molina near the end of the film where they reflect on, you know, Alfred Molina's exchange with a very handsome Englishman.
Do I detect a note of jealousy in your voice?
I have wondered what you've been doing your 3 nights without me.
That's not for me, Ben. You know that.
For all these years.
For all these years.
Amazing. I'm sorry I can't say the same to you, George. But at least I've always been honest with you.
Sometimes I think ignorance might be a little better.
I'm sorry, George.
Mind you, come to think of it, there are things that you couldn't have hidden even if you'd wanted to.
What are you talking about?
Like when you got cramps.
Oh, thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, or that guy in Rio who gave you the black eye.
That crazy motherfucker was trying to rob me.
Yes.
And it's just like, this is love. Like, I remember watching in the cinema and thinking, like, I'll be so lucky when I find it, because I'm a romantic. So I was when. And I think it's something that I think is wonderful. Just to have it's just a wonderful thing. I just absolutely love that these characters are so comfortable with knowing each other, flaws and all, and they're just so happy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And that, the duty that comes with love and the responsibility you feel, and that's why I think it's very key to what makes Alfred Molina's character stand out and why his performance is so amazing, is you can feel the weight of what love can do, and there is that need, but also this, you know, need for them to have this sense of place and the importance of all these things. It's just really, It's startlingly good. It's an absolute must recommendation of a film.
And Love is Strange was a big success.
Yeah, very, very beloved by critics and audiences alike.
For sure, and it does feel like the Iris Sachs film that is mentioned the most.
I would say so, yes.
He goes on to do Little Men in 2016, so just 2 years later, which is, I put that in as a close second.
Okay.
I love Little Men. It's a story of a father passing away, and the children, one of which is Greg Kinnear, want to basically allow gentrification to continue. And they want to, well, to do that, they'd have to get rid of Paulina Garcia, who works downstairs in the shop front. She has her own business and has had her own business for a very long time, and has also truly been there for their father when he needed them and when the children weren't there for him.
Leonor, do you want some wine?
Wait, I'm going to be bowling.
You know, Brian and I wanted to have a talk with you about some things anyway, so maybe now's a good time.
Oh, thank you, but I have to go back and finish some stuff at the office.
Oh, well, we just wanted a minute of your time, if that's okay. Right, Brian?
I have to go back, but thanks.
You know, Leonor, ever since my father died, just so much has happened. You and I haven't really had a chance to talk about the store and all that stuff. And maybe we could just have a chat this week?
Oh, I'm sorry, but this week is not good for me. I'm doing inventory, so...
Next week?
It is such an interesting film and such an interesting cast. Like, as I mentioned, Paulina Garcia, Greg Kinnear, Jennifer Ely. It's wonderful. So I highly recommend that as well. Then we get Frankie in 2019. So he's making, you know, films very regularly, and working with amazing actors. So it's Isabel Huppert who plays the titular role of Frankie. He's also moving away from New York for the first time in three films. He goes to Portugal. I know you didn't get to watch it, but I didn't force you to watch a clip. Mainly because we don't have to spend much time talking about Frankie, but it went to Cannes. It got mixed reviews, and it's not a film that is largely celebrated. It's certainly not the worst film I've ever seen. You know, it follows the story of Frankie, who is bringing her family together because she has a terminal illness, and she also brings Marissa Tomei because she wants to matchmake her to make sure she's not ending up alone.
Jesus.
What?
You invited her. This is all a plan.
No, I just think she would be perfect for him.
Christ, Frankie. You're playing Cupid again.
Oh, don't Christ, Frankie, me. You of all people should understand. I don't want Paul to end up alone.
But don't let the kids find out it's your idea. They go mad. This is supposed to be a family trip.
Well, it still is. It's family with a plus one.
You come up with all these crazy scenarios in your head. You think you can manipulate everything, don't you?
I'm usually right.
Unlike so many of his other films, I feel like there's a real disconnect between the actors mostly. Some of the actors are absolutely brilliant, and like Marissa Tomei is amazing. The other actors are less good. It's a bit of a mixed bag. It feels like yesterday we listened to Iris Sachs talk about how he brings actors in and how he wants them to merge with the character. But then, for instance, Brendan Gleeson and Isabel Huppert play a married couple here. There is no sense of any lived-in connection. And it's just, to be honest, Brendan Gleeson just looks like he's on holidays and just has, walked into the film. And I love Brendan Gleeson. I love all these actors in this film. It's just a bit of an odd one. So it doesn't surprise me that it hasn't connected yet.
Mm.
In 20 years' time, maybe it will be the film everyone talks about. But we love Isabel.
We love Isabel.
And what do you think of the clip I forced you to watch?
I would love to watch it so much more. No, it seemed curious. I, to be honest, couldn't get much out of it at all, beyond a sort of strangely stagnant feeling relationship. That was my takeaway from the clip.
And a bit like Married Life. Is that what it is?
Married Life.
I can't keep up. I can't keep up movie titles. Married Life. It feels like they're all wearing beautiful clothes and they're all walking around, and it just feels there's like a element of like falseness. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where that comes from. But anyway, all of that is not true of his most recent film, Passages, which is fresh on our brain.
Because we saw Ben Whishaw's back passage.
It is a very... I think that's what... This is. I think a lot of his films are very, you know, open to sexuality and nudity and all this sort of thing. But yeah, you nearly see Ben Whishaw's asshole.
yes, that's correct.
So that's correct. But it is obviously much more than the sex scenes. It's really striking.
Yes, I mean, it is. It's very much so. It's, again, about a series of characters and how they come together and can drive each other apart. So we have Tomas, played by Franz Rogowski. We have Martin, his husband, played by Ben Whishaw. And we meet them at a time where Tomas has been wrapping up a film he's been working on. They're going out celebrating. Ben Whishaw's maybe had a bit of a hectic day, isn't so much into the social scene, doesn't really want to dance with him. beautiful woman is also in the bar, Agathe, played by Adele Exarchopoulos. And after having a little conversation with Ben Whishaw's character, hears that he doesn't want to dance with Franz Rogowski and says, I'll dance with you. They end up spending the night dancing. Ben Whishaw leaves. These two characters then end up having a little fling situation. But Tomás goes home, tells his husband that this has happened, thinking that I think it could be received well, but isn't taken very well. But you get a sense that he's a character who's prone to this sort of behaviour.
Well, I was going to say, my reading of that is that he's trying to piss off Ben Whishaw and be like,
really?
You didn't come out, you didn't stay out. I mean, that character could be read in lots of different ways. He's a kind of a, like, he's a toxic man, but he also seems to take joy in teasing people.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I think you're maybe right that is what it is. I think he's quite delusional. So I think he doesn't quite understand the extent also to which what he does hurt people, and just assumes everyone is kind of as open-minded and hearted as he is.
And as committed. I think he thinks everyone's going to fall down to command.
But he then pursues more of a relationship with her, ends up jumping between the two, finds himself in a more committed relationship with her. Things happen, he goes back to him, and it is this sort of back and forth of his character fooling them into thinking something good's going to come out of it, but then running away from it again and causing more heartbreak. So it's a bit of this a yo-yoing of a very up and down, you know, quite unpredictable character, played very well by Franz Rogowski. I thought, again, this is an Ira Sachs film. You've already said you felt it would quite like, in many ways, very, very much like Keep the Lights On. And I think, though it's a really strong film, I really loved watching the characters kind of fighting off each other. I found these very intimate moments, as we have seen in other of his films, but here really effective and quite mesmerizing to watch, and not in a sort of pervy way, just sort of like, I don't know, it was, I think, just beautifully captured. And he acknowledged himself in the Q&A afterwards. It lingers on them for much longer than it should.
Yeah, it's a proper sex
but,
scene.
That's the point. It is a sex scene. You're watching a sex scene kind of happened throughout its course, and you're not just kind of dipping in and out between cuts. You're going to watch this, and a lot of bouncing happens, and then we have the consequence of said friction.
But even with the, sorry, I started off trying to be like not talk about the sex scenes, but I think this sums up Ira Sachs's filmmaking in general. Is the sex scene between Ben Whishaw and Franz, where Ben Whishaw is topping, is not shot, like, it's not, you wouldn't see anything like that in porn, or even like OnlyFans or something, if someone was to take a look. We won't be linking to any OnlyFans here. But, you know, it's really, it's like naturalistic, but also like specific to the characters.
Yeah.
In a way that is so revealing. And you could say that with the sex scene, or the way that they're having coffee together, or how they exchange about greetings.
Yeah.
I just think that's such a really beautiful thing. When it works like it does in Passages, or Love is Strange, or Keep the Lights On, it is incredible to watch. It's hypnotizing, because you're watching people, even though you may not understand what they're doing, or, you know, it might be a whole, thankfully, world away from any toxic behavior. I've never had anyone in my life as bad as Thomas. I think that's something I really struggle with with friends or stories, and you're like, why the hell would someone stay or be interested in this person? But then I've just maybe been lucky that I've not fallen in love with a complete asshole. I'm sure I've used the word asshole for exes or such.
Yeah, I think, but that's the importance of how the other characters are drawn to, of Ben Whishaw's and Adele Exarchopoulos' character, that you can sort of understand something within them for very different reasons that almost needs a sort of either a complementary person to their life, or someone to counter certain things about them. So for Ben Whishaw, I think there's this sort of, you can feel that he is in quite stark contrast as a person by the way we see him interact with the world and other situations around. But then she feels maybe a bit freer and more open on his side, however, underestimates quite what he is like and that he isn't kind of going to settle and create this homely new family dynamic that she's maybe hoping he will. It's the interplay is fascinating.
I think I'm falling in love with you.
Say that to Lotha, Imogen.
I say it when I mean it.
You say it when it works for you.
I say it when I feel it.
And Ira did not really hint at what's coming up next in the chat yesterday, but he does have Christodora, and it's a diverse set of characters interact in an iconic building in Manhattan's East Village. Now, this was announced in 2016, so I have no idea if that's still happening. He also, once upon a time, and I think this is definitely dead, he was writing a HBO either series or film about Montgomery Clift.
Oh.
Or Cliff, do you pronounce the T? Cliff?
Montgomery Clift.
And
I'm questioning it.
He did. He does talk about like not liking the biopic genre. So a bit like Marriage Life, maybe he's not the right choice. I mean, why is there no film or story about Montgomery Clift is beyond me, because that is a fascinating queer person in film history. And of course, like Oscar written all over it for whatever young buck goes and plays him. So yeah, that's Ira Sachs. Is there, like, how have you fared? How have you enjoyed reflecting and, like, throwing yourself into his work?
I've really enjoyed it, and I think there's a huge value in actually watching them in quite close succession and understanding that they are of one creative mind, two creative minds in the most part. But it's wonderful to see that even with that, the kind of the stories and the specifics of these characters is quite unique in each, and quite therefore unique from any other films that are quite so intimately about a small selection of characters. So I loved it and would love to see a lot more of his work, and basically just keep them coming. Every couple of years I'll have another. Thank you, Ira.
Yeah, and speaking of which, what are you hoping for in his future?
I would, to be honest, it's kind of more of the same, but with more wonderful performers. So I would maybe love to see him work with, I mean, maybe I'm just saying this because of the Isabelle Huppert thing, so you just go to the other heavy hitter in contemporary French cinema. I would love to see him work with Juliette Binoche. But then let's think of some young, sexy male stars. Harris Dickinson, I think he would be wonderful to see in an Ira Sachs film, and could see that happening, and could imagine Harris Dickinson seeking out a filmmaker like Ira Sachs to work with. But yes, again, maybe one set in London. He was speaking last night about a sense of place, and Passages is set in Paris rather than New York or Memphis or wherever else we've had. But maybe I would quite like to see something set in London, perhaps. And how that plays into it, and how this city creates part of the character dynamics. Yeah, that's what I want. What about you?
Well, even though he probably has no connection to this, this is something I just think his type of movie would be just a really fascinating conflict, would be set in the west of Ireland as a American couple in their like 50s, 60s, I'm saying played by Barbara Hershey and Bill Camp. I have thought about this. They are like many tourists that visit that part of Ireland feel like they're like part, like, you know, it's almost like a fairground or like a Disneyland or something. And it's about the dynamic between them and the Irish people in the town that they're staying in. And this conflict of, you know, the Irish people maybe not wanting them, but wanting their money.
Okay.
And the Americans wanting to feel part of it and feeling, you know, they've paid for what they, you know, want. I think there is a really interesting thing you could do. I'd have, because he likes working with past supporting actress Oscar winners like Marissa Tomei, we'd have Brenda Fricker, of course.
Of course.
Breach Brennan, Barry Keoghan,
okay,
Aidan Gillen. Okay. Basically, all these great Irish actors. Even Brendan Gleeson could come back.
Well.
Or Brian Gleeson, because he's the Gleeson child that I think probably is the least famous.
Yeah, I'd never heard that name in my life.
But he's in the West End doing The Crucible.
I thought you were just mispronouncing Brendan.
No. So, anyway, that's what I would like to see. But to be honest, anything that he makes, I'll be here to watch.
Wonderful.
So, thank you everybody for listening. We'll be back with a really exciting and sadly our final episode in this queer sort of mini-series, which please do subscribe and shout out and tell everybody else to subscribe because it's going to be good. You can find us on social media at Don't Know Her Pod. No, underscore is it?
No.
At Don't Know Her Pod.
Oh, sorry.
No, is that me? No, I'm. I don't know. Is it underscore or not?
Sorry, yeah,
it is.
I don't know her underscore pod.
Thank you. And you can email us if you like on don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
You surely can.
So yes, thank you all for listening. Please do tell one other person if you enjoyed this episode to have a listen to us and share in our celebration of a filmmaker who is really special and I'm really glad is around.
Yeah, I echo all of that.
Thank you. Well, and as always, thank you, Scott.
And thank you so much, Michael.
Bye.
Goodbye, everyone. Bye-bye.